So it's nice to be able to help work on so many TV commercials as a service. But what's nice about me and Aline thing, it's like, you know, heavily executive and directed by them as well as me, got in charge of the direction, working with the directors of the Harry Potter films, as in like the designers. Anything you see designed, you know, anything like this, it's them. It's just, so it is a pinch around the door, but I did put some dilute to like pinch me. But I remember when my first studio was there, it was in this back little office that I'd like, what do you want to do with this room, Drew? And I was like, well, brick everything out, paint it all black. And they were like, what? I was like, that lovely, you know, 18th century window, board that up. And I was like, this will become my dungeon. Sleeping on floors, because I can't afford to be in there. I slept in gutters, I slept in bus stops. I thought I was like, because I mean, I love music and fashion and stuff, but I thought I was like a rock and roll animator, so I'd get really drunk. I need to go back to the Drew of everyone needs to know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that cringe element of like, oh, it's cringe to the people that you're working with in the sector. But at the end of the day, they are going to get to work, and that's great. But I need to prioritise and move forward to keep the business going and the new clients and the continued clients.
Mm.
You're really clear about it has to do this and it has to do that. They'll literally time it to it. They'll just put it on the same timeline on the animation software. And when they're playing with the puppet, it's like, right, at this point, I have to hit that little jerkin. So it gives them that reference. You sometimes meet when you've met your match and you're like, oh, fucking hell, we're going to clash here because we're so similar. But if you're always finding ways to kind of navigate, but I agree, it's like, I think as a creative or as an individual, when you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, you always admire what they're doing, or that the grass is greener, isn't it? Like, how good they are. We're really not knowing how hard it is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always that admiration for other people. When actually, when you get to meet them, it's like, oh, I'm glad I'm this, and I'm glad they're doing that, because then I don't think I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you admire it. It's showing appreciation to someone, isn't it, really?
Yes.
So, I don't know. It's. I would love to be that.
Cantona.
Yeah. I'm a leader at work, like at the studio. Like,
yeah.
I don't go, oh, I'm going to do this. It's like, oh, right, we've got this. Don't worry about this.
Yeah.
And like I said in London, I'd be the same like, to the guys. Are we going to get out of here in 2 hours? And then I'd try and like, the answer is yes, Drew. Okay, thank you. That's it. And then it's giving them confidence. Yeah. I believe you can do it.
Yeah, but you're not saying, like in that example that you give, you're not saying, oh, I don't know. You're saying, yeah, man, it'll work. It will. We'll make it work.
We've got to try and make it
work.
But, yeah.
Like it. Mm. So welcome to the B2B Business Club podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. It's just going back to what we were saying, really. It's just shouting about people in Birmingham.
Yeah.
They're doing great things in Birmingham. And you are, or adopted. Are, is, was, you adopted.
Adopted.
Golden child of Digbeth.
Heavy man.
A good friend of the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself, because as we've just discussed now, you don't shout about yourself.
Off air, no. I'm Drew Roper. I am the founder and co-owner of Yaminnation, which is a production company specialising in animation and stop motion in particular. So we bring like inanimate objects to life, and you know, anything from clay to silicon to foam. We do that, but as a whole, as a company, you know, an award-winning company. We've won awards in like our TV commercials, what we've done, short films and things like that. But as a production company, we can kind of take on any type of challenge. We do live action, we do 2D animation, CG animation, anything that can complement the story and complement the idea and the project of what's there. And as a production company and an indie, it's good to be challenged. And for us, it's like there's nothing that we can't do. And anything that's really difficult to us, it's like, it's an exciting, weird thing, but it's an exciting challenge to go, how are we going to solve this problem? So as a production company, it's great because you get thrown around with stuff. Like, we're on something at the minute with Diet Coke. It's like a crochet job. We're like, yeah, right, we can do that. And it's not something we'd have done before for something else, but like most of our model making team, our crew, fabulous like model makers, they do it in their lunch breaks and stuff, in their like break times. You're like, oh, great then, you know, so.
During the dark
cut. Yeah, yes, it's kind of, but as it, yes. Yeah, so
the soundtrack.
I don't know how much I'm allowed to talk about that, actually.
Okay.
But, sorry.
That's okay.
But something that's been released, so that's why I've mentioned something. But yeah, so we're an animation studio basically based in Digbeth in Birmingham. Yeah.
So you get those new jobs on, and there's bits that you can take from other jobs that you'd be like, oh, well, we've done that on Crane and Dial, or we've done that on At Issue, or we've done that on, which we'll go into the big stuff that you've done. And you'll just be like, okay, then let's take those, what we know, and then the rest will work out. Or
yeah. obviously every day is a school day. I like to have. It's like, I think I'm only 38, which I think is quite young to be in a position where I'm running a company with my partner. And we've got, you know, financial advisors and an investor. God rest his soul, he's amazing. It's unbelievable. So bad, like, he's died. He hasn't.
I know, yeah.
God bless his soul. But his name's Paul. He's unbelievable. Like, been a huge help and saviour, really, for past years. It's been quite difficult in the film sector. But, like, yeah, it's good to... every day I wake up, I'm challenged with stuff. And not, like, physically or mentally with stuff, but, like, you know, just with work, creative work. It's nice to feel fulfilled every day when you go to work, because you're like, how are we going to do this? How do we do that? How do we access that that client? And how do we access that top of funding to try and do our own stuff or whatever else? Whereas other people's, I feel a bit lucky, really, because our job is just, I'm just fulfilled, but it is very, like, time consuming and all consuming of your time. And you do have to sacrifice a lot. But you can't let that not let you have a life. You have to try and figure out how your life's going to be evolving around that. Because animation does take a long time to get it right, to do it properly. Well, this is the misconception of stop motion, but, like, to do really good CG animation, it takes longer. And then you've got to wait for it to render. And if you haven't quite got the, you know, the render farms that the Pixars of the world have and everything else, and some of the UK studios like Blue Zoo,
They've invested
heavily in these render farms. It's like, you know, if you don't have that, it takes a little bit longer. But, you know, anything good takes time. That's the, you know, and it doesn't matter if it's 2D animation. Just might be a bit quicker because of materials or softwares or equipment you need. Whereas in stop motion, what's beautiful is you're getting to bring something from a design physically to life, so you can physically see it. And when you've got that kind of light now, like, I love, it's traditional. It's a camera, it's a puppet, it's lights. Nothing would ever change. That what you shoot will stay the exact same of how it's looking like in 20 years' time. So it will never date.
Yeah.
And getting instant gratification from it. Yeah. After you're doing it for a couple of hours and you look at it, then it's...
Yeah, you do get a bit doolally.
Yeah.
You're on something. I mean, I don't animate as much anymore. I don't animate anymore. Like, I'm the orchestrator, so, you know, kind of me and my partner will bring you it as producers and directors. It's like, I love directing people because... You get to work with talent that I am nowhere near as talented as, and you're like, you're going to make Ash, you look amazing. Could you do this, please? And you're like trying to get them out, and you're becoming like your inner thespian is coming out to the animator, go, I need it like this, it has to perform like this. And I'm like, okay. And they do it, and you're like, oh my God, I could never do that. Like, as much as I was good at drawing, good at making puppets and good at this, and I had amazing opportunities working on Shaun the Sheep, and I got to work on Fantastic Mr. Fox and Frank and Mina, got Tim Burton and Wes Anderson and stuff. And those early experiences were amazing to be on. And you're working, you're seeing the talent, and you're like, fuck, wow. And then you have that imposter syndrome, I'm not that good. And you are, but you're not in your head.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also because you're not been doing it for as long as some of these people. But some people are just so talented. And I guess what I do now is I get to work with these unbelievable people and bring them to the studio and elevate what we do. But it's nice because there's still that level of respect between yourself and that talent to kind of go, this is what I'd like you to do, can you do it? But it's all about how you word it for me. It's communication, it's being a people person, which I think is my background, like who I am, where I'm from. Like, I'm from the back country, Wild West Midlands, as my family used to call it. And it's that honest, hard-working, you know, working class background and upbringing. You know, my granddads were bricklayers and builders and coalmen. My nan's always worked like at a farm, like picking fruits and stuff. And my other nan was a seamstress, hence why Luke's come into what he's done as well.
Yeah.
So we've all been very creative, but also there's that graft in us, I think.
That's good.
Yeah, and I just, you know, my dad's a plumber. And most of my family, aunties and uncles and like cousins and relatives are like tradesmen. And for me, it's like, I remember being 15, I was sitting in the pub at Christmas and my granddad, who has a look short, of whiskey and a cumbra, a veil. And he remember sitting with me, he's like, what do you want to be when you grow up, son? And I was like, 15, you know, grown up. And he's like, hang on. And I was like, I want to be an artist. And he got literally clicking around the back of the head.
Yeah,
did you get that? Nonsense. What is that? You're just like your uncle. Who's, you know, but uncle is a fashion designer.
Thought suddenly you want to be a dancer or something.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that still.
But there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, Pullman.
Yeah, so I'll be fried with
you. Yeah, Pullman.
Yeah.
But it just said to me, it was like, do you know, whatever you do, just never give up. and keep going. And I was like, oh, that, I'm really emotional, because that's always stuck with me, because it's really difficult with my background to get into what I'm doing now, because there's not much opportunities. I don't know many people in those sectors. And you have to have something within you to go keep going, because the doors aren't as open as maybe from that type of ilk and that sort of background. And
it's thick skin.
Has to be, yeah. So really what I do now, it's like, it's just, I feel like lucky to be able to work with this talent. And that's something's happening, that, you know, we've got a business that's doing this and employing people and doing it in our home region. You know, I'm not from Birmingham, I'm from Walsall, and Walsall Wood. It's like a coal mining region, a mining town. And I am like an adopted grummy. I moved here in 20. I've always worked here, like clothes shops, like Reese and like Limey's back in the day. Remember Limey's?
Yeah,
I worked at Limey's as a Saturday job. Thanks to like my uncle and my cousin who works there. One of my cousins has always worked in retail. So again, through family, so it's connections, it's family members. Like, yeah. It's knowing that of knowing like the UK. It's like that's knowing people and just being articulate and communicative with everyone, keeping in touch, being nice, being kind.
Yeah.
I think it's opportunities naturally lend themselves in certain, I guess, areas. But I thought, yeah, Birmingham's a great place to be. And when I was in Wolverhampton when I first started doing this, I went
to... That's the name.
Yeah, so, yeah, being a Yam Yam, like, I've obviously mixed Yam and animation.
Ah,
that's
how he's done that.
Animation. So the Midlanders love it. Like,
yeah.
It's a real, like, when I speak to anyone in our sector or, no, Yam Nation, you go, fucking great, man. You're like, oh. I didn't actually come with it. I can't take it. But I can't help with that. So when I worked
on
when I worked in a clothes shop in Reese in the Boring when I was at uni, so 2006 and 2009.
20 years ago.
Yeah, I was like summers, Easter's, Christmases. I was back for like a few weeks, and I was in, you know, any whatever corner I could save for strands of clothes, because you're working in that. You just become accustomed to where you are. So I was always a really smart kid again. I thought, God, this guy can dress. And I was like, yeah, man, I've got no money, but look how cool I am.
You've got glasses on now, you've
got glasses, yeah.
Well, that's still amazing. Yeah.
I had to look quite swoopy today. It's a workers' jacket. Yeah. It's colourful.
Yeah.
And the one of the lads that worked there, he's a lovely guy, his name is Jay Zary, and he was like, dude, how's all the Aminations going? And I was like, Aminations? He went, yeah, you know, like Aminations. And I was like, that's my company name. And that was back in 2006.
Right.
As soon as he said it, it just was like, I'm not going to say like, you know, pound signs come up, because you don't really have as much money yet in this, you know, what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, wow, that's a great name for an animation studio, especially because it's got so much link to where I'm from. And I think what's nice is it's showing people that, you know, with the Hollywood, you know, the entertainment sector, the Hollywood feel of what we do, there's still a homegrown feel to it, which I hope will relate to a lot of people, because it is one of the questions I think you might probably like with is, how do people get into it? They want to see people that they can believe in. Like, why do people love Oasis at the moment? There's so many working class people, so the times are hard. They believe in the people that they feel they can relate to more. And it's so, I know it's a bit like farcical, but like that, when I sort of heard that name, I was like, that's going to stand me in good stead, I think, with the right people. Anybody outside of the Midlands is like, what on earth is that? And they go, Yanimation. And I was like, it's okay. Like, you can't be offended that they don't get it.
Yeah.
People think it's a Brazilian fruit. Which is like, do you like fruit? Yes, look at my belly. I love fruit. And biscuits. So, yeah. But, my background is
you think that with the new things that are happening around here now, that will... This is not a question. It's just
fun today. Yeah, fine, yeah.
Do you think it'll play into your hands? Do you think they'll embrace you? Obviously, with blues and stuff. They embrace Stephen Knight. He's been on a lot of the adverts and stuff with the new kit. JK was down here. UB40 have played down here. Are you talking in and around blues, around? Or have you had communication? Is there something that we can... Or even with the film sector and stuff that's...
Do you know, so... I know Stephen.
Yeah.
Not like well to, you know, as in... I know him because it's Stephen Knight. And I've been on boards with Stephen. We've had good chats. And you know, I hope he'd remember my face if we saw him. I saw him at the Newcastle game here. You know, Bob's been a massive Blue Nose. You can't help but love what the club are doing. And these people that you go, oh, my God, they're Blue Nose as well. You then feel like an instant connection to them.
Yeah.
But years ago, was it Panos? When Panos was the director here, I got chatting to him at a business meeting. And I thought something could happen there. But then nothing materialised. So, and I hadn't really, like, the inner animator of, like, I just want to be in a dark room and play with puppets. Mm. Like, I don't get out there as much as I should do. Mm. And what I'm really realising is now, we've got an amazing team in that we can kind of, I can leave that to. Any moment I can get to step out and kind of meet people, I need to do it. So when you kind of call me about this, I thought, I don't know, this would be a real opportunity. Because I haven't done it for this for an age. But I used to do it all the time because the factory went when we first met.
Who's going to send that back up inside? I can just see that they would be like, let's get a quirky animation of something. It's just different. Well, especially with the socials and the content.
Not to kind of spoil it, but we're going to try and do something that looks special for guards. Because he knows we're family relatives of ours, and he's always hard to say we get tickets when we can't get them because of Salt Gate or whatever.
Yeah.
And I want to do something special for him. What can somebody that's, you know, someone of a footballer that's got as much money as they ever need, what can they not buy? So we make bespoke things for individuals and organisations and
marketing.
Yeah, marketing. You know, things that go, that are eye-catching and wow, can give you the wow factor. So we're working on something at the moment where we think it might lend itself to be not a side business, because it's what we do with our skill sets of like sculpting and making models and whatever, but we think we can maybe do something that might catch on as a kind of like nice little side thing when we're not full-time busy on an advert or something.
Mm.
But as far as putting that out to people, what we need to do is market that. We're in negotiations about getting like a new studio, like a much larger studio premises, which would enable, still in Digbeth, the heart of Digbeth, literally up the road from where we are at the moment, with the same sort of landlords. You know, they've been really good to me, as you've said, as you've kindly put about me being the Prince of Digbeth or whatever it is, or the Lightning Child.
Yeah.
I don't see it as that.
But I used to walk around, you're back for the dining, you look like a celeb, okay?
man, segue, sunglasses on.
Yeah, you're my cigar. Like.
Yeah, just with an easel.
Speak to my people. It's lovely. Well, it's just because I'm chatty and I'll chat to people and if someone wants to have a conversation, because I don't know who they are, I don't know where my lead. I try and treat people the same, whether they're, you know, elite to some, or it doesn't matter who they are. If someone wants to have a conversation with you, that means the world, because it's like, wow, they want your time. Nowadays, when you're running companies and you've got ample projects and ample crew, it's like time and, you know, being a father of 2, 3, got one on the way. It's like, time just, if the one thing I could wish for is to have more time. Time is so precious.
Yeah.
So I think when you do give someone that little bit of time, it means a lot to that other person.
Mm.
So yeah, when I was there, it's like, because networking, it's like, you've got to get out there. People need to know who you are. The one thing when I go and do talks at universities or like in, any type of lecture I ever give, it's like, the one thing that I can give advice on for somebody is, you might be the most talented person, craftsperson, whatever in the world, but if no one knows who you are because you haven't spoke to anyone, you're just going to be a wasted talent. Not saying I'm talented, but it's like, but I thought the one thing I can do to help maybe stand me in good stead or for people to recognize us over other studios because of how competitive it is by just putting stuff out. So years ago I was quite prolific at that, but to the point where I wasn't doing much of what I was supposed to be doing, which was maintaining the studio business side of stuff.
What you just alluded to there, though, is that a lot of creatives are introverts, aren't they? So you just... They've got all that and they want to stay in a dark room and do whatever, so...
Like I'm saying with you now, I'm actually quite nervous doing this because...
Oh, we're all right now.
I'm okay now, chilled, yeah. It's sort of the alcoholist level in the table. But I'm usually behind the camera because it's my comfort zone. I can control everything.
Yeah.
And in stop motion, live action, so much of what we're doing in a studio, you can control everything anyway. If you're trying to shoot outside, it's different, but... In animation, you literally control everything, the sound, the music, the performance, like the dialogue, like the actor. You're like, as much as you give them you're literally just trying to give them like hints of what you want them to do. But then for me as a director, what I like to do, and it's same with an actor or whether it's with an animator, because as Disney always said, animators are actors with pencils. In my case, they're actors with puppets. It's like the reason why you get them into work is because you want their personality to help bring that character to life. As much as you've got to keep it uniformed and unique for that character, I feel as a creative, if I was to work in an environment, which I've had, worked at these feature films and TV series and stuff, and you're like, if I ever get to the opportunity to start my own thing, how would I want it to be run? And you want to feel at ease, you want to feel like people believe in you and support you. And then if you're creative, you want to give them that creativity to go, go on, go off and do this, obviously within reason, right? There's that.
Yeah.
What does come with that though is you're on set and you look back at what something's been done and you're like, oh, that's not what I was after. It's not exactly like we're gonna go. But that's only ample time. And the one thing that adds a bit of like a, okay, and may need to be a bit more clearer with something or whatever else. It hasn't happened often, but when it has, you're like, ugh. But I do like that. But that to me is living on the edge because I don't know what I'm going to get back. I'm not like a director where they're like, I wanted this and it has to be this. And it has to hit that beat and it has to do that.
Mm.
I'll be like, it needs to do this at this point and make sure that, but you've got to let that person be creative and be free. Because I think you do get better performance and better work.
I was watching, rewatching the At Issue Behind the Scenes last night. Brilliant, the editors, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
There's bits in that, you know, when you're doing the two camera and you come out and you're like, well, you come out and then you,
yeah.
And then he's with his pants on and then he comes back in and even the stuff with the bird and it needs to be, that's good, isn't it? And I think that's invaluable to an animator who's coming in that doesn't necessarily know you or they get a real feel to what you want, then you still do that.
Because they're known as are like labs, like live action references for the animators. So it helps if you can't always be on set with them, so they've got something else. But actually, if you can give them something that instead of them pestering you throughout the day, they can just have a reference on the screen to kind of look at. And a lot of them, then, if you're really clear about it has to do this and it has to do that, they'll literally time it to it. They'll just put it on the same timeline on the animation software. And when they're playing with the puppet, it's like, right, at this point, I have to hit that little jerk. And so it gives them that reference. And I think it's becoming, when I did that, I mean, that was over 10 years ago now, which is like bizarre to think. It's like 2013.
That's really, really well received, isn't it?
Sky
Arts and all that.
Yeah, Sky Arts for a license, 2-year license for it. And then they renewed it. So it had 4 years on Sky, which was like, as an indie company and a young filmmaker, like it was like a dream come true. But you're kind of like, okay, what's the next thing we're going to do? And what's the, you know, and you've got to use that as momentum to go forward. But going back to the live action thing, it's whatever information and detail you can give that performer, because an animator is a performer, I think you're likely to get the best results because they're really getting a tone of what you want as a director. Because they're just trying to impress you, you know. On TV commercials and things like that, when you're working with clients and brands, it's like, they're not impressing me, they're impressing the people above, like the people that are making the decision for that brand. And so there's a bit of like, you hope that what I'm directing is on level par with what they want, but it's that sense of them, the articulation between the execs versus the people on the floor doing all the creative work, really. But yeah, At Issue was like, it was a second short I did. Third short I did outside of uni. So I left uni in 2009 and went and worked on Fantastic Mr. Fox. But before then, I was working on as a junior animator, like model maker. And
how did that happen? Left just happened to drop onto Fantastic.
Yeah, no, that was it. Yeah, just was like, do you know who I am? I'm the Prince of Deep Earth. the future prince. Again, networking, knowing people. So when I was at uni, I went to Southampton. It was the Arts Institute that got formed into a uni at the time. And so as a uni, didn't have a great reputation, but for the arts, it was still really quite good. And again, I was known as a puppet boy in like year one, year two, for wanting to just play with plasticine and clay. I guess always being inspired by like Wallace and Gromit stuff. But all my career, I've always wanted to do Walt Disney, believe it or not, until like 16 and 19, I had 2 knee ops and was like, there's my football career gone. And I think going to study something like animation, I had to do a year at Sutton Coldfield College as an art of a nation course. It kind of like, really, because as a kid, I was just like the chatty one in class, and we'd always get by because of that a little bit. And then when it comes to like being a sixth form, they're like, so what do you want to do at uni? And I was like, you know, art. And the teachers are laughing at me going, you haven't just said that, have you? And I was like, yeah. They're like, do you know how many forms and mediums and disciplines of art there are? And I was like, have you not been paying any attention? I was like, no.
So I got a lot of painting and that,
you know, art in it, you know. And so I was a bit like, I was that naive, like generally, until I got to do that art foundation course. I just got by, and you get by because I was so active as a kid. I'd be playing football. I'd swam for the county. I had national trials swimming, county trials football, paid for the county football team, I paid for trials for all these other clubs. And, you know, I was always cricket in the summer when there was no football or, you know, I was constantly active as a child. And I think, again, the good thing about sport, just the bonding girls, the network, you know, the, and I think that's helped me, especially with an environment now where it's quite intrinsic. And not many people like football, so it's very rare to speak about football at work, but it's having that camaraderie with people and that knowing what to say to someone. And as a football, as a young kid being at school, as the football team, I was the captain from day one, from year 7 until year 13, captain of the swimming team, would actually teach, like instead of me swimming at school, when it was my lesson, I'd have to teach the kid that couldn't swim to help the other two tutors a little bit so they could spend more time with the kids trying to swim. Because I generally was like so good because of my mum and dad literally put me, they could see I was good at something and push me. And then I said to him a few years ago when I had my firstborn, I was like, you know, until you have your first kid and you realise how much support you got from your parents and you don't realise it because you're a kid. And then when you become a father, you're like, wow, my mum came to every single swimming comp for my
work.
And my dad came to football. And then when my brother, I've got an older brother, and he would go to him and my mum would be with me. And then my sister, who's 4 years younger, would have to just tag along and try and enjoy the day. And it was a bit like you don't realise how much time they put into you. And so I think knowing that and knowing that without that sport side of what I do is an art thing, because obviously I knew a lot of people at school that were, again, beautiful artists, but they wanted to keep it as separate to earning money because of how hard it is to earn money doing what we do. But I've always had that belief where it's like my granddad said, just never give up. Believe, if you believe in something, keep going. But going on from school, I was always captain of stuff, always a leader of stuff. From like youth team football to like university football and whatever else. And then my knees went. But that kind of leadership has always rang through. And that's why I think as a producer, you're wrangling people together. And then as a director, it's the vision to go, how can I articulate this point properly to make sure that they get it? But I've juggled director-producer for so long. It's like, I never wanted to be known as producer because of how the stories you hear of how horrid producers can be. Because they're in charge of the budgets, they're in charge of the timescales. So they're in charge of people's happiness, really.
It's one thing I don't enjoy doing, producer.
It's difficult. That's the one of the questions I think maybe we'd like to talk. It's like, what's that? People management is hard. Because everyone's different and you then have to realise, how do I articulate this to make sure I get the best out of that person? But it's also about being kind as well. But the thing is, being kind, you can be kind, but you have to still be firm. As a leader.
Very fine line.
It's like being a player coach for a football team, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You've got to distinguish yourself as
so
the player and then be like,
hey, we're friends. Are you going to do that work?
Yeah. Exactly. That's
it's like, people have said to me in the past, I'm quite passive aggressive. It's like, well, it's a horrible, horrible thing to have on you to go, that's a bit passive aggressive. Because you're like, you can do that job now.
Yeah, but seriously,
that's it. But it's like that management technique, or you've got, or I'm just aggressive, and no one likes that, especially these days. You can't. The young people now come into a workplace can't speak to them the way you spoke to them. Can you, son? When you've have you ever been doing a stop motion production? Has anyone ever bumped into the model or not the model?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, either we.
So, well, ironically, so when I didn't say this, I forgot to say, but just in passing, but I got an amazing opportunity to get my first studio. It's at the Lighthouse Media Centre in Wolverhampton. And thanks to a contact I knew from working in retail, the guy that knew in retail, his wife was, or ex-wife now, was like a head of his arts charity in the arts camp, the Lighthouse. And they've got this great hub of creative talent. And people that have been there and trained at this, at Lighthouse, producers, DOPs, hammermen, like lighting people, we all work together still. So there's a core group from Wolverhampton that we love working with each other. And again, you've got that, you get on with each other, the same sort of ilk. But I remember when my first studio was there, it was in this back little office that I'd like, what do you want to do with this room, Drew? And I was like, well, brick everything out, paint it all black. And they were like, what? I was like, that lovely, you know, 18th century window, board that up. And I was like, this will become my dungeon. I remember I was working on something. I remember Luke, who's the creative director of Luke Fashion, is my uncle. And I'd just finished uni and he was like, oh, Drew, we've had this animation done, what do you think? Of like this story of the history of Deming. And I was like, yeah, it's good, man. And he was like, and I was expecting to go, that's great. And I was like, no, well, you know, it's good. Like, it's like, you think you could do better? And I was like, yeah. Stupid then, I'll give you an opportunity, yeah, then. Here's a little bit of money, make something. And I was like, okay. And at that time, I was like, he's a piece, man. Like, just learned this at uni, easy, my first kind of role. But I'd worked on Fox and I'd worked on these really big commercials like McDonald's, loads of great things like when I was at training, like I was at uni, sleeping on floors because I couldn't afford, you just can't afford to be in males. I slept in gutters, I slept in bus stops. I thought I was like, because I mean, I love music and fashion and stuff, but I thought I was like a rock and roll animator, so I'd get really drunk and I just.
Saturday night, I'm
with. Oh, mate. Saturday night. But when I was younger, it was even worse because you don't know your limit either. And I'd supposed to be staying at like friends' houses or acquaintances or something. Oh, you speak to so and so, then knowing people, they'll look after you. And then my phone would be dead, I wouldn't charge it. I wouldn't be able to afford to have a phone call. Like, as a student, I didn't have a pot to piss in. Nothing's really changed. But it's that, like, you know, you're living on the edge. And I think it's that when you look at rock and rollers and when you're going, oh, I'm an animator, you, there's just no comparative. But so when you're drunk, you're like, yeah, go on, man. I have lived and slept in some really unusual places. I've burnt my bun on lights that lights up buildings because I've just slept outside of it. Got offered lots of things because I've been like semi-naked because, you know, it's just, I hope my boys don't follow in my footsteps. You know? But working, those things are stories and they're experiences to go, I've come from nothing and I've lived and I'm building my way up to those things. And it's a great story. It's that, where did you go last night? Well, Angel for you.
Yeah.
Where did it? And then so it's a conversation with somebody. And then, you know, whether it's cool or not, you know, it's not great to speak to execs about that. But some execs that are quite rah-rah actually do like that little bit of grit and that little bit of, these guys might be a bit of a longer. But it's how you, if you do it with a smile, it's kind of okay. Yeah. But working on those kind of productions, it's, I think, like, in London, yeah, it taught me a lot about how hard it is and how you have to keep up that momentum.
I remember you saying, working on the Denim one, when you started working with Cyber,
yeah,
the DOP.
Yeah.
I've seen that last night.
So
was it better? Did you produce the Denim one better than the original? I've never heard that story.
I would say...
Salute, like, wow.
I don't want to disrespect the company I did before me.
You were not going to mention that.
I forgot who did it. I guess for me that was my first bit of my own work outside of uni, where someone's trusted me to do something, and again it's that trusting, okay. And you learn a lot along the way, and I ruffled some feathers along the way, because you do. Because also, what I think something we spoke about briefly, this is like, what do the kids at film school? How does a fucking run a business? I didn't go to business school with animation or with film. I went to learn how frames move and the timing of it to be a good animator or like a storyteller. So for me, it's like you're trying to finish a production, but you're trying to do it on time, on a budget you've got. You don't take the piss out of anybody too much, but then also you don't have much money at that time to do stuff because it's a one-man band. It's not like it's going to be a TV commercial, so the budgets aren't high-end. It's a nice thing that a company are trying to afford to do, to be a little bit different to the rest of their competitors, to go with every pair of jeans that gets sold, they get a special little DVD or USB, so you can have a look at it if you want to. Whereas nowadays, it's obviously everything's on your phone. You know, when I'm sending, you know, when you look back at that, like, everything's so digital nowadays. I remember when I first started out trying to get an opportunity to work anywhere, it was like, you send off a DVD to people. Any kid now, I go, what the hell's a DVD? And on it, I'd put like a little Kit Kat in my DVD and have a little note as well, because we all need a break. And I got a response back from pretty much everybody I sent myself. I never got a job. So I was like,
appreciate the Kit Kat.
Yeah. Thanks for the thousands of pounds of spent on Kit Kats. Nestle, please reimburse me. Nestle, if you're watching me, come have a job with me.
It's like a dare, isn't it? Yeah. Kit Kats.
But I think it's
do you employ staff now?
Huh?
Do you employ staff? Yeah, or do you get more freelance?
Employ staff, yeah.
Going back to the whole running of the business, you've still got staff to buy. And...
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it costs a lot, ridiculous, really. No, I always say this in Juliet, my partner, that always says, oh, don't say that. Like, yeah, when I first started this, I was literally just in my bedroom in my pants trying to do something. And then someone sees something in you, gives you a bit more of an opportunity, and then you show that you can do it, so you excel, and then you're like, okay. And now to have where we've come from in the years we have, to have, like, you know, the team we've got. I was thinking about this point today, because the one thing you think about being in business is, like, you employ people, and it's like the scale of your thing makes you successful or not. And it's like, how do you rate success? And I think for us, it's in our sector, and in the film sector, animation sector, like creative industries, it's a freelance world, like it's a freelancer's world. They literally get the opportunity. Everything's a short-term contract, and I'll work on a project by project basis with different clients. I think I'm lucky to work with who we work with that are freelancers. But it's nice to know that sometimes you'll get to work with different ones as well. So we always have like a blacklist of who we want to work with first. And I'll get first priority because of who they are, what they do, a good deal, whatever. And if they can't do it, I love that then as well, because as much as I love working with that person, you get an opportunity then to work someone new. And I love that because it's another person to meet, and it's somebody has to talk to somebody about, and they might know someone you know, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, so it's a bit, I love that. But there's four of us employees, and then we've got two, I'd say, permanencers that they're in a lot. I probably should be calling it.
If I had Jamal here,
it's okay. It's the sector. We are trying to get some government grants soon, so we might have to start actually putting to expand the studio, because we're at that, like you said earlier, that we're at that point where we need to expand the studio. We outgrown where we are now. We outgrew that space as soon as we moved in, but we moved in to try and utilize the money we had to put into our own IP. So we've got like loads of catalogue of projects now that we can try and sell to different streamers or broadcasters, whatever else. But now we kind of need to kind of move to a bigger space, A, to fulfill that, but also to work on bigger productions, because we didn't grow with that move that we did 3 years ago. We kind of stayed at the same. We had to leave because the building got sold to a film school, ironically. But it's like we've got housing spaces, it's been great, but we just need to move forward with it. But I think, and going to that then, it's like the overheads and stuff, you still have to pay people. And it's like, there's a bit where you're battling with like another person to work with just becomes a bit more of a... But when I was, so before 2020, it was just me and an assistant. And I did all of this stuff. I worked with all these amazing clients, and you know, the perception of business is you're bigger than what you are. We'd get students that come to the studio and go, oh, this is it. And you'd be like, And you get people that are experienced and professionals that go, fuck, man, what space? How do you get this on your own? And you're like,
that's fantastic.
You know. Shouldn't have done much, but yeah, it's like, you know, how do you, so it's that thing of perception with stuff, and it's again educating the youngsters to go how hard it is, but they soon realize. But it's also businesses like, you know, it's the work that should stand out, not us, really. And you're only as good as the last piece of work. I've got a massive, like, no matter how high the budget, so we've had some really great projects, we've got budgets out, it's the budget isn't an option, it's just the deadline of whatever else and articulation or whatever else. But and we've had budgets that we've done on an absolute shoestring for something, but there are limitations to that. And what's nice for that, you get creative, but also everybody else has to understand the limitations with those, you know, kind of, I guess, parameters that you're set. But it should have the same impact as your last piece of work. And if you haven't done that, I don't think you've done a good job. And that's kind of, for me, there's that pressure, like kind of, it does keep you awake at night. I'm not going to lie, like it is. I'm not the 4 a.m. boy. If I've got something on a bit, I'll wake up before him. And then I'm all right, and then you're okay, then you settle that down. But you learn to deal with those kind of business stresses.
What's been your most favourite job you've ever worked on?
I was thinking about that. I don't think there is one. Because they're all as unique as one another. I know that's really cliche, and it's probably crap.
I mean, that one was really good, wasn't it?
So I was in the car. I was in the car outside of St Andrews, listening to Mr Blue Sky, getting pumped up for this podcast.
Yeah.
And that question in my head popped up and was like, what's the one? And I think that was the first big job that the studio would be affiliated with. Because we can do that job. We helped with that job. We built several, again, because of people I know and work with. I'm like, you're amazing in the art department. Can you do this? I mean, because of that person being with us, same as Yossel, we then got a load more art department work. And then obviously then while he was focused on the build of it, and I wasn't needed as much, so I could figure out like the marketing side of stuff from the PR side, and then the next job, speaking to if I speak to, helping him then run that bit. So you're kind of learning on the job as you're doing it all, but like that job for us was, I think it was such a massive project to be a part of, because I still speak to, so we get work experience. The one thing I want to do as one of our goals or, for the word now.
That's right.
Yes, like a goal or an incentive as a studio. We always try and have our doors open for work experience, because when I was a kid growing up, there was nothing like this on my doorstep. And I want to make it open to everyone who wants an opportunity to come in and work. And obviously, it's difficult to navigate that all the time, but we try each year to have a couple of work placements. And, you know, when we first started it, which is people we knew, But now it's the people we don't, and it's, you know, and there's proper health and safety measures in place. And, you know, when I always first started, someone's like, yeah, I've got a, what are they called? Fire risk assessment thing.
Mm. Watch them wires over there.
Yeah, just don't do that. Yeah,
that light, if you press it, then CERN, it'll electrocute you.
Just put some goggles on me doing that. And it is these risk assessments and stuff. And it's like, it is, again,
it's going to be proper.
Never knew anything like that when I first started. So when I was at the Custard Factory or the Lighthouse, I was always under like a huge organisation, like in a building anywhere that was surrounded by. You didn't really need that as much. When you start getting your own studio and everything else, it's like, okay, things have to be a bit serious. And you're working with these clients, and they almost expect you to be of a certain ilk.
Liability insurance.
Yeah. So that all goes up. You're like, oh God, this is costing me a fortune. But then, you know, you get the bigger working, so it's kind of that.
You've jumped forward there, as in what's the future? So it makes it a bit more viable for people. But like the running joke is the careers advice that they give you at school and stuff. But you want to make it more viable for everyone, kids, then, for people, sure. Especially a lot of the Midlands and stuff.
You know, I think like anybody you speak to that's kind of an owner of a company or runs a company or whatever else, it's like if they could give their time to go and help tour fit someone's unit, and if one person is inspired, it means the world to that person to go, okay, I've acknowledged something then that they never thought they would ever see. So that, I always like being asked to go and do talks at schools, because with as a homegrown lad, and what, even if it's not homegrown at whatever school anyway, it's like up and down the country, it's nice to just go and do that. But again, obviously when you're in the company, you don't have the time. It's really hard because obviously you have to weigh up what that's, yeah, personally, it's doing a lot for you, but actually as a business, it's like, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's quite a fun thing to go and speak to.
It's amazing.
As well, isn't it?
It's the same with universities. Like going into doing fuck at uni, where these people are ready to step out into the world you're in and you want to do, but again, the money's not great for you to do, considering what you should be earning on a project and what, where you want to make, the business has to be in a good place first.
Yeah.
But for us, that there's always that ethos where if we can help someone, because without support, I wouldn't be where we are today. No way. And I'm not saying it's financial support, but it's that shoulder to cry on, it's that rub, it's that food when we've not had any money for anything, you know. When I first started out, I had nothing. But mom and dad would go and do divorce, so you're like, you're in a world of like, whoa, how do I? When you've got this ambition, then it doesn't really matter, you're just on your own trajectory, and you're like, I'm going
to
do it.
If you're going to unis as well and telling them you've worked with Warner Brewers and Aardman and this, that, and the other, and you're from Walsall, and you're like, oh, it's just me, kind of thing, they're like, all right. Yeah, it's inspiring, isn't it?
I hope so. But some of them, I think if you appeal to one person, it makes it so much more like enjoyable and memorable for you. But it's not about you; it's about them. Obviously, it's them, just to give them an idea of what it could be like for them. But a lot of the kids from like state schools in particular as well, they don't know what options they've got.
This is what culture was saying when he came into.
Oh, what a hero. I actually saw him on Saturday walking through town, and I was like, Carly gave me the biggest hug. And he's like, he's just such a genuine man. Like, he's so, so helpful, so supportive.
Feel like that, won't
you? Yeah. I will forget that.
Only him. He couldn't have sat in there and he was just like, the stories and
do the same. Like, the glass scene, even. With trying to do things and finding that you can't, not even as a racist thing or a sexist thing, that there is an unspoken class thing that exists in certain industries.
I think that's another conversation I think to go into, and I think there's people that, I think there are local people that have made documentaries about that, which haven't really been aired. I wonder why. I totally agree with that, but again, like anything, you have to always squeeze some gum with it and just go, that's on facing. There's other people facing.
You find there's a bit of a London bias in your industry.
Absolutely. But also, I don't think other regions help themselves. They always compare themselves to London.
Yeah.
And nobody should. London is beautiful. It's a wonderful place. It's amazing. I love visiting. I love working and doing the odd bit and bobs. And I've lived there. I've worked there. And it's still great. And I've got whatever experience I can for it. But also, it's so busy. It's so busy. And I think what's nice about being back home in your home territory or home region is you become a big fish in a smaller pond and you become more known. Now, whether that compares to London is a different scenario, but they still know who you are and still know what you'll do. And you still ruffle feathers by getting other work from people that are trying to get that. You know, we're up against Armour a lot of the time when we go to jobs now. It's like, wow, what kind of feeling that is, but you know, 9 times out of 10 you don't get it because you know, they thought maybe a lot more time and effort and run we need to try and get pitch than what we could afford maybe. But
I'm mad at then. So you grow up watching Arden and thinking, this is where I want to get. And now you're
working there as well. So
So now you try and go toe to toe and disrupt them because you want to share the pie. And...
How far are you away from Arden in regards to?
Any central business, but it's so close. But realistically, Arden are the pioneers of British animation that are currently operating. The ones before Cosgrove Hall, who sadly aren't existing anymore. And then Arden that really just elevated the animation scene for the UK. It's over the past probably 10 years I've really started to get everyone in the animation sector really likes it. The UK loves them because of Wosip Drum Instrument Machines and things, but overseas they haven't done as well as I think they maybe ought to have done or could have done. Because also there were never like back-to-back-to-back with features. Yeah. Like all the through the fix studios of like Pixar, DreamWorks, Blue Sky, who are no longer, you know, Leica in the States, so who do stop motion. So they've always got a feature. Arden are now doing that, and it's brilliant to see, because there's like all this talent in Bristol that are constantly employed. But I remember like being on Show Machine, and everyone's like, I'm out of work tomorrow for another 6 months, because I'll wait for the next things to come in. So it's great, because as a British pioneers, I mean, it's taken them time, and they've done it without investment. They've done it without like selling their soul to the larger studios. They are, and they're dragging bigger. And every time I turn on a newsletter, they're doing something new. It's really.
Well, the last film's critically acclaimed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Reverse Penguin. So it's like an internationally famous film, isn't it? So,
yeah, ironically, my eldest, he's 5. He gets scared at the original, like the wrong trousers somehow, because of Penguin, because he's so villainous. And then the new one, he loves it. So it's a bit like, I've been maybe obviously a few years younger, but Armin, I'd like you so. Okay. So to be in a position where we're, you know, on projects and we're 1 of 3 or 1 of 4 to be, you know, maybe get some work with them is great. And we're also, as a studio and an indie, we support other larger production companies that, you know.
You have to do that white label kind of thing. You have to wear your t-shirts all coming out.
But without that, you know.
And a lot of his NDIs, isn't it?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of stuff I can't, you know, I do share when we're allowed to. But if there's someone who works on stuff, it's like, I'd love to do this.
Is there anything NDIs have lapsed on recently? You can.
Yeah, so there's something massive that we're going to start getting out soon. There was something huge that came out on the 1st of July, on Tuesday. So LT London, ironically, working on this Diet Coke event thing that we're doing, like I said. And I got a text message from a friend that works at Mina Lima. Now, Mina Lima, the design house behind Harry Potter, and Mira Faramina and Eduardo Lima, like they're the two, like, you know, who's after, like they're the two pioneers, the designers that have come that could be through. And we were very fortunate, like Juliet behind us, like huge Harry Potter fan. I love Harry Potter, but she's an avid fan. They were doing a talk at Birmingham Design Festival years ago, and I came up at the big giant screen, did a talk, Mina Lima, and Juliet's just like, blown away. And then there was an opportunity to go for a pint and a pizza at Digbrew, which is no longer happening in Digbrew afterwards. So and as we were leaving, not hung around like kind of vultures, but you're like, oh, there they are. And Eduardo had gone, but Mirafori was still there. And so we kind of, like anything I've done, any job, it's personality, it's sincerity, it's genuineness, authenticity. That's kind of, I guess it's that thing with Carl. It's like, if I can get any of that from him, I feel like I've done well. But we just got, we were walking, are you going to the pizza? But she's like, yeah, here we are. And the barber's there, they're not married now, his name's James. And he's like, right, I'm James, I love Drew Massimino. What are you doing? Because I'm a set builder at Pinewood. And I was like, oh, cha-ching. And then we just fanboyed it off, and I was like, wow, what have you worked so much on? And then explained what we did. Juliet was speaking to Mirafora. We were there till 3 a.m. You know, like, and you get to, and it's not, I'm not saying we're abashed or anything like that. Drinks were flowing. But,
yeah, in the big area.
Yeah, that's where I ended up really good at it. Thanks, Mirafora. But it was that thing where you just connected people that you admire what they do, you're massive fans of what they do, but they are just, and it's not to take anything from them, they're just good people who are so talented doing what they're doing. And then we built that friendship over the years. And, you know, a few years ago, they came to us and said, you know, we think of elevating our beautiful world of our books and illustration that we're doing into and bringing them to life? You know, is this something you'd be able to do with us? And I was like, fuck yeah. I was like, that'd be unbelievable. So all of these pals, all of these like fairy tale books, and they've got all these classic books, you know, Peter Pan, Little Mermaid, they've made their own beautiful, elegantly illustrated books that are like just one-off genuine pieces of art. And they want all them to come together in a story to kind of be told. And I thought, well, it's got to open on an old school stop motion fairy tale, really harshly lit book that it opens up naturally like an old Disney film. You know, and you come in and then you zoom into the book and then it turns into this beautiful too, because their soul stylistic like aesthetic is very 2D, it's very flat, it's very like almost like pin orientated. So you try to keep that feel, but within to do it on a, you know, with the time frame you had and the budget you had, it's like you know, it was wicked to work on, because you just got to elevate what digital can do. But what I like to do in my direction is try and utilize all technologies and all mediums. So in tissue, there was stop motion, 2D, CG. In this, the CG is 2D, the stop motion. It's all that utilizing what tells a great story, but it's beautifully unique. To have their visuals to work from anyway, and they were designing stuff specifically for us to then go, well, we'll take those Photoshop frames and build that in to make just make the move. It's like, it's a dream. Again, that's a dream come true project. Because a few weeks with and do it for. And that was released after 2 years on Tuesday. So we got to share some of that. And there'll be a few more bits, so I hope we get to talk a few more bits of what we've worked on with them. But it's up a 2 minute film just sitting there, like waiting to
go. I suppose that's hard. It is really hard. I'm absolutely grafted on this. And then we can't talk about it until whatever.
I keep seeing Tom Cullen, you know, from iTunes.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are we going to do an interview? And I was like, oh, fuck, I can't talk about anything.
Yeah.
You know. So he's going to hang over this now.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tom. But
yes.
It's that thing. It's that thing of like, this, you don't know, because you have
but to. But they'll like get you loads of business and obviously the content and what you share now, you'll be like, that will bring in directly business.
I hope so. Yeah. Because also, what shows for the studio is, I get, like I said, when I first introduced what we do, we're a production company that specializes in animation, because that's what we do. We do all forms, but what we're known for is stop motion. So what this film beautifully, I hope, articulates is that we can do it all under one roof.
Yeah.
A lot of clients want that because it's less hassle of having to wait and other people do
that. No, okay, solution.
Yeah, just leave that to me. And, you know, do you get Marty? It's kind of like, right, that's what we can do.
So one point of contact, one vision, one conversation with Juliet or whoever, and you can look and delegate to them.
Absolutely. Then,
the departments.
Like other jobs we've done where we've built just specific copies or something, or we've built sets for something to complement somebody else's work, and also to share the workload, because of how on TV commercials you get notes on.
You like to
It's so even if you threw loads of people at it, because still things take long, you still won't get it over if you did everything. So other people need to be working on other stuff at the same sort of time. So it's nice to be able to help work on so many TV commercials as a service. But what's nice about me and Aline thing, it's like, you know, heavily executive and directed by them as well as me, got in charge of the direction, working with the directors of the Harry Potter films, as in like the designers. Anything you see designed, you know, anything like this, it's them. It's just, so it is a picture in the dark. I did put some kind of link to you, picture me. It was, and now we get to talk about it. I hope we're going to try and see if we can get, I think, a bit more PR about it, but we need to kind of confer with, like, you know, gossip being here. But also, the fact it's with friends, it's a relationship that was built out of nothing, not for any gain, like, oh, they're not here, so work with them.
I'll pretend I'm someone not.
I do, that's what I dislike about pitching projects and going to, like, conferences, because you know you're after something, and the people that you're pitching to know it as well. And that, to me, is a lack of authenticity.
That's about LinkedIn, in a nutshell, isn't it?
And that's the scene, like our kind of co-producer Michael Ford, who's like a limited bit good lad. Again, local boy from Wensbury. Wensbury? I don't know. Yeah. We met again at Morgan to the White House and stuff. And again, it's that thing of Michael's amazing at fitting stuff. And he also knows, like, he will share stuff with Tim and be proud of it. And that's right. And the way I should be. But I always cringe whenever I post anything. I can't help but cringe. I don't know why. And that, is that a Birmingham thing? Is that a Midlands thing?
That's a Midlands thing.
Is it a British thing? Yes. Compared to other nations.
Yeah.
But I do think in the Midlands we are. But then the same that Michael's not like that, and he's brilliant. And, you know, that duo for us has been brilliant to date. So But it's that thing of we need to share more. And that's the one thing I've realised is we're very lucky because all of our workers come from word of mouth. And it's come from this genuine, they're really nice. They really do good stuff. Let's try and just do something with them.
That's the overriding. When we do this, when we talk about business, the overriding theme seems to be people deal with people, don't they?
Yeah.
People need to like people. You can buy something from person A who you don't like. You buy something from person B, you'll always go to the person you like.
Yeah. Maybe it's a bit more expensive or a bit more whatever or a bit further away.
Yeah.
You'd go
to it. Then price isn't necessarily the issue, is it? You can tell it'll be more expensive with someone else, but your personality and your business and your product shines through, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think the thing with the cost, though, is it just, you know.
So it's different than yours. This is the budget anyway, so.
Yeah, that, depending on who it's with, like if we're pitching for something, it's kind of, we know the figure. But when we're doing it and we're supporting as a service house for another great production company that are doing some of this, and, you know, the bigger production companies are recognised as a great talent for our directors. That we're, you know, we did something last year in Nexus and we released in October for the Guinness commercial. We did like the Dancing Canyons to promote their Nitro Surge head. I mean, literally, the director, actually Johnny Kelly, he's just a dream to work with. Like, as a director, he's so calm, he's so cool, he's funny, you would see, he's so nice. But never, you know, he's just like, yeah, it's great, I keep going. It's like, you know, great. So
tell us some of the directors that are real assholes.
No, I'm just.
Yeah, got the floor completely in the face. You said
that's fair. Yamination editor anywhere. I thought to say that's not. I've never really experienced that.
So I really like the synergy between.
And I'm not just saying it because I'm on TikTok, right?
Yeah, we're gonna AI some names up there.
AI. Yeah, use his voice.
So I really like the synergy between animation, kids animation, fantasy, and horror, and. Animation with an edge for kids. So you said you worked on Frankenweenie.
Yeah.
Like Tim Burton, pretty much everything he's done in regard to Not Then Before Christmas.
Mm.
It's all edgy, isn't it? It's all, you show it to your kids. Sometimes it scares them, sometimes it doesn't.
Yes.
And then they come, it's like a nice gateway into horror for kids, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And I think stop motion suits that.
Mm. Yeah.
Because there's that tactile stuff. You can kind of see where fingerprints have been. It's not as clean with what we've done before as what CGI is. So when he made A Corpse Bride, that was all really smooth and flawless. And people thought it was CG back in like 2005. And it almost got like slated for it because it didn't have that such an authentic charm as what stop motion story for me. But the thing is, like Leica proven it in the States as well, like an Aardman, of course. Yes, they're utilising the medium where it's like you can get something different than that CG struggles to do. I say maybe not struggles anymore. Because of how much that's just improved as the years go on. But it doesn't have the nostalgia and that charm as what a stop motion thing would have. And I think many people we spoke to come to see them, it's like, oh, stop motion, it's a bit, you're meant to be stop motion me. And they're like, what does that mean? And it means they want it to be a bit jerky and whatever, but that
imperfect.
That to me is what that, the imperfections are beautiful and I think they can be embraced and they have been embraced in stop motion, but that is an imperfection that's been stigmatized as being stop motion when it isn't. It's just limitations of whatever else and points it's had, or what the vision of a director is. It's like, that's what I want. But you can create flawless stuff in stop motion.
You think CGI is going to be the death of stop motion?
No, that's all.
Right. Is there a hardcore of for and against kind of?
Because I said that with 2D. Like when CG came out, 2D's dead. Not at all. 2D's had a huge resurgence. Stop motion has steadily discontinued.
Mm.
It is. It has a specific look, but like if you've seen, like for instance, like there's a the women's Euros now. There's the BBC Sport have done it's all claymation stuff. Didn't get to working out something, but it's all claymation and it's just beautiful and it's really funny and it's quirky and it's really dynamic. You know, the camera angles, the views. So to say that, you know, that's suited for a 2D animation or CG animation, which is where you put camera, is utter nonsense. I guess it's just director preference. And I think stop motion is, like I said earlier, when you look at something, you make something, because it's authentically captured, it's real, it will never date. It will just look exactly how you shot it. The one thing that does date it is the cameras you've maybe shot it on. So if you're shooting on old cameras, like, and it's like, you know, 4:3 version, and it's a bit like, it's a video camera, it's not as, you know,
sharp
as it is nowadays, but when you shoot, when I used to shoot on film, like, again, with film, mate, you can digitalize it. It's beautifully crisp. It's incredible. Mm. So I bet think on knock, even with AI, like, I'm not.
That was one minus, right?
Yeah, well, we're going to start that. Yeah. I do shit myself.
That's creative.
Whoa.
It's the Telerine, the technology Telerine. Such a rise, isn't it? The stuff you were looking at last year, and you go, oh, look at the fingers, look at this, look at that.
Yeah.
And they're putting stuff out now.
Yeah.
There was something the other day, Michael Madsen, tribute AI, but they're tied him in all his different roles. Obviously, he passed away the other day, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So they're tied in all his different roles, and it's so smooth. He's, 1 minute he's his Reservoir Dogs character, turns around, becomes his Free Willy character.
Yeah.
You know, they did stuff like that a year ago and it looked similar. Now, look how smooth.
Yeah, it's
CGI.
It's a very much scary. CGI is the same. So I think that's the one thing. I think a lot of creatives and artists have been scared. Rightly so.
You are embracing.
We are at the best of times. I think artists and all that, there's always a hesitance because it's like, you always feel like an imposter. So it's kind of, there's that kind of anxiety that you kind of naturally is as a creative, like you kind of have that in you because you care as well, so you want it to be right and whatever else. But I think we have to use AI as a tool, and it's, we're trying to, we get pictures from agencies and other groups and groups to go, oh, you know, this is the deck of what we want to try and track for this DB advert or for this promo or whatever, and like that, and you know it's been AI, and you're like, okay, so that's, but then that's great because it just shows them a vision of what they can expect straight away.
Yeah,
you know, sadly artists may have lost the work to do concept art straight away.
Yeah.
But then with that work, it's obviously at the minute, it's not, you have to then take that as a design, but what, that's what I've got to work on. Now I need to fully build something.
Yeah.
So there's always, and again, that's where to use as a tool to help explain it to people that maybe aren't as creative, who are in exact positions that are heads of business.
Yeah, across there, don't want to explain the whole double jerk and all that, but they're not that
person. Exactly, they're kind of undermining a CEO of a company. They're not creative, they're non-times at the same, not creatives. So they want to literally, without telling us, okay, because you have to literally, they want to see what it is before they commit. So I think AI is helping with that. For us as a company now, doing what we do, it's like, how can it utilize this as a tool? Like everything that we've used, it's like, hoping help us go forward. So 3D printing is one.
Yeah.
You know, 3D printing, but that will take over from what makers. Not at all. It's just complemented it. There are still pros and cons to doing traditional clay sculpts and hand, you know, silicon and resin molds traditionally. And fiberglass molds compared to a 3D print, you know, and there's ways of doing that traditionally to get a certain mold to go, oh, if we do it that way, it has to print hard, and then to get something like that's at the end of it is a cast that's rubber, that's silicon, that's soft, I don't have to reprint it or remold it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's pros and cons to both, but I think it gives you something quick to look at straight away. We're just in a low loop for this job, it's like that job, like where the 3D prints and stuff for that, and everything we do now has got some form of 3D printing in. AI itself, I think it's like about Photoshop, like if you and you look at the lasso tool or the one magic wand tool, years ago people would have had to cut around that individually,
mm-hmm.
taking them hours if not days, whereas now they go, oh, this magic wand,
so avoid and that
AI is, on that. As a,
it's making it, it's always been, isn't it, for less skilled people.
Absolutely. So people still got jobs, but it's taken them less time to do, which is great for everybody. Yes, whether they earn money, but then maybe they can charge a bit more to know they're going to be done in a smaller time frame. So that's the one thing. All the communities of people, like, again, I'm trying to speak to a lot of different heads of studios about how are you guys utilizing AI? And what are your kind of, what's your values? That's what I was looking for, that word value.
Mm-hmm.
Value is like, what's your values on AI? It's trying to see what other people are doing, and I think they are trying to embrace it, but without it taking over.
Yeah,
they're trying to help complement what they've done. It's predominantly pitch phase to get something a bit quicker out,
mm-hmm.
but also it's this. I remember, there's so many different platforms now, but I'm like, I don't even know me generally what I knew, but one thing that I always feel when you work on high end projects, especially TV commercials, where you know you're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds for an advert, if not millions, it's like, if something's been done with full AI, who owns that?
Yeah.
There's still a massive...
That's the AI with artists and stuff.
There's like, no cloud to it.
Black Mirror, so, isn't it? The Netflix one's down the line.
Yeah.
Mm. So just to wrap it up,
this. Okay. Okay. That was quick. Well, that's what we
fast. Yeah, that's not fast. It's after it on for part two, once you've got all the NDIs out there. Yeah. Part one.
So what's in the short term?
Tom Burson.
Yeah. What's the short term? What's the long term? You mentioned about long-term vision would be Statue of You in the birth. Or, no, you mentioned that, but that's what I'm thinking.
Flying statue.
Yeah. What's in the short term?
Wouldn't that be great, having a statue or something?
Meebles are still there, then you would be. It would be you and.
Remember, someone else fighting, and then you'd end up with something.
That face on the thing.
What a hero he is. We're still really close. Dave, you can sort yours actually on some property.
Nice.
Where to go property wise? Because if you
get mice on the.
They did a mural at the custard factory, and he had a coffee and a cigarette in his hand. Because that's what he used to always draw in the custard factory, a coffee and a cigarette. He was like Mr. Suave, wasn't he? Still is. Mr. Suave.
Yeah.
When we're working, like, we're currently working at our build at the moment to talk about some new premises. And he loves Dave. And it's like, and we had the builder's architect in who's recommended us to. He's Ash, a lovely guy. So we kind of had him, we brought him to the space, and Dave walked in, and I was just like in awe of Dave. Like, Dave Beagles is in. Because he's just
super. Dave, Andrew.
Dave, what's going on? Like, the staff, man. He just it's fun doing
to see. Oh, I'm going
to die. Dave is lovely. Yeah. So it's, I think, first, it's. Long term, yeah, statue, of course. I mean, everyone wants that, don't they? To be defaced by somebody. But I think short term, generally, it's been really tough. You know, without our like saint, like Paul, who's been our like, investor, it's been quite hard at times when things have been a lot quieter as of recent years. Generally, keeping a lot of time is I turn on an email and newsletter every Monday, they're like,
well, it's a tender saw. Is it? Do you use tender saw to swap reconstruction so we can register and be a creative tender saw? Yeah. And then you never win them because, again, the bigger companies are in.
I've never done it. Like, we've always relied on word of mouth. Which is not really a testament for the studio, which is really, you know, we're really blessed for that. But then I was chatting to my DOP, the other day, because he's, you know, every time we go for a project, they're like, the director, if it's not us, it's like, you know, or even it is us through who's your DOP, like, sites, we've lots of them, whatever you kind of we have, pretty much, bar a few of us that we look into what we do, like ex-Armin and still Armin. Yeah. But they're all freelancers, like I say, they're all free, you know, you can't really afford to employ a cameraman full time because of what they get freelancing. But it's you work with different people, and you kind of like, you want to build just against that level of success, and I'm saying to Silo, the other day, how do we become more available to more people? And he's like, for the first time in years, if you go back to saying, look, I can't tell who's your DOP, what work you done? I just showing this clip path, and he's like, so now he's spent time building himself a website, building himself a show reel. Now, we've always had a show, we've always had a website, but it takes them time to get there, and it's cost, very costly if you go to the company. We can do it in house, so we're doing it as and when we can. But it's having all of those credentials behind you. So he was saying, we as a creative now, because of the market maybe changing AI slightly, because of things are becoming a bit more fast paced, there's still a lot of work out there, but it's knowing how to get that type of work. We have to really think right now is utilising our websites more and different areas of marketing as a short term, I think.
Just about this is that.
Yeah, because we've had people come to the studio who've worked for years, and they're like, I didn't know you did this. And I was like, really? And they're like, yeah. You know, one of the artists was sculpting with down, you know, the massive digital scene seeking. He's like, you did your digital sculpting? I was like, I've been for like 10 years, like since.
Mm-hmm.
What about the world also we've done? I can't show you. So it's a bit like that's the.
So it's not taking you back to before you, though. So what do you do? Just like art, you know?
Yeah, art. You know, art stuff. But the thing is, what I've learned now is I need to go back to the Drew. Of everyone needs to know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that cringe element of like, it's cringe to the people that you're working with in the sector. But at the end of the day, they are going to get to work, and that's great. But I need to prioritize and who fully keeps the business going and the new clients and the continued clients.
Because
mm-hmm. they're going to say that you're busy because it's, you know, you become more acquirable. I mean, you know, we are busy. We've got several things bubbling away,
Can't talk about them. And so it's like, yeah, we're really busy on what?
But they're really big, but there's a reason why we moved into a bigger studio because of these bigger projects we've got to make.
Yeah.
We are, I can't confirm a studio move yet, but that is probably in a way. So that's a short term thing that will happen hopefully this year, like come the end of the year. I'm going to have that larger space, which is like more than three times what we've got already. So it's a growing space to be in as a HQ. Long term.
Shout out about that, haven't you?
Yeah.
This is
long term this week, I've actually got a writer coming up tomorrow night to stay with us again. Any kind of artist, like animator, camera person, model maker, if they're not from the region, I'm trying to get to know them because I want to, you know, they just come and stay with us in the jewelry quarter. And as much as, yes, it's, I don't have to put up in a hotel, it might be pretty cheap, so, but it's not that. I want to get to know that person. Mm-hmm. We go through their sales days. They see what it's like to be Drew and Juliet at home as well as the mm-hmm. studio.
Yeah.
So you create that. We call it the Yam Fam, and we've got that like Yamination family. It's like you work with people that you want to grow with. And so we've got a writer called James coming up tomorrow, and we're developing a feature film based on my hometown of Waterwood. Undisclosed title, because I might change it, but it's about creating like a story of like the goblins, a pit in Waterwood called the Goblins Pit. So probably giving away about far too much moment, but we're developing a speech film. We're going around the Netherlands as of Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday
to the principal soccer.
To like, well, it's just to go and show James where I'm from,
mm-hmm.
why I'm inspired by what stories I've got to tell and why. Show them like the Canic Chases, show them my hometown, show them the backcountry museum, show all these things that I've helped build.
Yeah, she's my ledger.
Yeah, because that helped build me and how helped shape me and why I'm thinking of what we're doing. Because he's going to write this, hopefully, masterpiece.
Yeah.
And then, and we, you know, we've acquired a few opportunities about trying to get that further. So I'd love to have a feature film under my belt. We're still negotiating, still trying to put TV series projects out. We've got a few developments that are still ongoing. And those are huge. We've got great names attached to those. But again, because they're at stage, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit weird to discuss. But yeah, so it's to try and work on, it's to continue working. Right,
yeah.
That's the main thing.
Yeah,
and continue to please people for sure, and I hope that people get inspired by what we do. But for us, it's like it would be a dream to like do something on a huge scale,
mm-hmm.
and almost emulate what the city's trying to do, is do bigger things, because I think it will help. Again, look, it's another string to the city's bow that there's a company from to do this huge, you know, this another huge. I'm not Stephen's doing it with this film studio.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't it be animation as well? So we're. It's a big ambition.
I'm excited.
Well, it's weird because it's like in a game. It's like, oh my God, what?
Mm.
But it's such a long road. Like, if you speak to anyone who's had a long form animation project, whether it's a TV show or it's a feature film, they're like, from start to finish or start to production, from like the ideas, it's like 7 years.
Mm. Why? I was going to say, I wouldn't want like a 90 minute feature run in regards to production.
Well, I think so. To get the idea into a position where you can green it to go, it's a majority of people say 5 to 7 years just to get it into position. And then you have to make it, so there's 3 years. So,
but you can see why Aardman stuff took so long.
Yeah, and it's see why, you know, the last John Masseter of Pixar and all these, you know, these guys that made feature films and Nick Park, Aardman, and, you know, Wes Anderson. They're making really, like, there's so much time and thought gone into these animations because they take so long. And I'm not saying there's not that goes into live action, but you can churn out live action a lot easier quicker than you can do animation.
Sound right, yeah.
So if you want to make prolific stuff, then do live action. But if you want to make the beautiful thing about animation, maybe stop motion, but I mean, you would even see CG, really, you know, with a Pixar, as Fox said. If it's a great story, it will always live long in people's minds. So this year, 2025, 30 years since Toy Story was released. 30 years.
Oh, fine.
But if you watch the first Toy Story, you never go, God, look at those graphics. Because it caps your grip by the story.
Mm.
So it's just as long as the story's there, really.
Mm.
But again...
So you know, it's in Kubo and the Two Strings.
Yeah.
Took my son to watch that cinema. I thought it was a kid's film.
Yeah.
Sat in there. Magnus is Isabella. It's full on, isn't it?
So that's
great film.
That's who we're doing. So that's who did like... Coraline, they did
classic.
Paranorman, which is one of my favourite movies.
Yes, Paranorman. Yeah,
well, like about that. Yeah, it's left there, and they're doing. They've got another film out now. I think it's 5 years in making already. Called Wildwood. And one of my closest friends is one of the riggers on that job, and he helped me set up Yamination at the Crystal Factory. So I met him on Shaun the Sheep as a rigger, and then he was out of work for a bit. His name's Chris. Remember Chris Goff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, loving to bits, look at that. So, super genius, like, a genius. And you're like, well, Chris, I've got this short film, got a tissue, I'm trying to make it. Do I help you do it? Yeah, man, I'll come to Birmingham. So, from Manchester originally, came to Birmingham, fell in love with the city. So, he came back recently for, like, a sabbatical, just to kind of, you know, have some time off work. Wanted to stay as long as he's been in Birmingham, because just loves it. Just a great place. And I think what's nice is that energy of what the city's doing, as well as what we're trying to do creatively. But he's, and he's been there for long, and he worked on Kubo, and loads of Brits are over at Leica, because again, not stop motion is a British, it's very British.
Because you can feel that in the film,
yeah.
Even though it's, you look at it, it's like, oh, it's a Hollywood, watch it, cinema. It feels like a, it's got like a British heart.
Yeah, man, it's so, it is so British. It's not super British. And, but also, not to say the Americans aren't, you know, they're amazing as well. But like, I think, that, okay, so it's a unity of people, which I think a lot of their stuff with the stop motion community is kind of like, oh, they do so much CG, so much post heavy. You know, there's so much green screen. And so you do lose a little bit of authenticity. It looks quite sharp and crisper. But you're like, kind of like, oh, that's therefore, that's their niche, that's what they've got, and they've got an audience. So, you know, and that's the thing now that we're facing is, what audience do we want to tell stories to? Well, you know, we've had about preschool projects that, you look at certain preschool projects and they get cast as preschool, but they're booked preschool. You're like, what's the difference between upper and preschool? And you're like, well, preschool's much more calm. It should be on in either early morning or at the end of the day to kind of calm.
No, like, they're lots.
Upper preschool is like the fast-paced stuff that's still light-hearted and fun and slapsticky, but so it's trying to balance even at the children, like who's your audience, and you're talking like brackets of windows and age groups like that. So it's a difficult, it's a, everything's evolving and always changing. So I hope that we can still do that as it goes on.
Amazing,
thank you.
Taxi time. No, I'm excited to see you all.
Yeah, thanks.
Fun time, Matt.
And before you go, one last question then. Yeah. Top three MA films.
Oh,
what questions, Andy?
Paranormal. Number one, I love Pinocchio, the first Pinocchio.
Sinister.
Mm.
The way the social media took those early Disney films and reinterpreted what they mean. So that Pinocchio now is XD's Ireland, isn't it? Yeah. With the type of kids, apparently.
Whoa.
Have you not seen this? The reinterpretation of the early Disney films.
There's always someone trying to shoehorn something fantastical into something crooked and horrible, isn't it?
That's social media though, isn't it?
Yes. But that's the thing of what Disney has done now. He's tried to take you out of the real world and put you into a fantasy world. So you the real life struggles and horrors aren't there. But someone always finds a way to... Mm. Like, it's an underlying message. Like doing a lot of work with the lovely guys at Roald Dahl. I remember chatting to... it's digressing slightly from those two questions, sorry. But again, fanboyed. When I finished the tissue, I was like, I want to make something with Roald Dahl because I fucking love his stories.
Mm.
Obviously, he's not around anymore, so a lot of you just emailed the company, emailed me, like, this might be, I'm not going, this is going to be too long. But as long as I'm sure, I've got a lovely opportunity to do, you know, I still do.
All these last time, it was taking like it's obviously a sign. So.
Several years of work with them, still continue to have a chat with them about various projects and stuff.
Why have you done Roald Dahl?
It's all like,
again,
coming out, I think. The NDAs were finished now, so I'll be talking about them later, but we were...
Yeah, it's time about it.
Yeah.
Tom's in there for you, about.
Yeah, no, I don't know, but the grounds at the time when we were doing like a bulk of work with him, he's absolutely look at the lovely guy. Now, I was chatting about stories of things. It's like, you know, what was Stuart's granddad like? He's twice. He was only, he also doesn't, you know, he's got lots of memory of him, but it's
not...
Huh?
He can't do that at all.
No, he didn't do that. Well, that's the idea there.
Oh, what?
They're both incredibly tall, yeah, and their cheers. But he was saying, like, I remember, I was told a story from Luke about his mom saying they were going to him in the past, like a kid's birthday party. I'm like, Dad, can I get him a gift? But he's like, no, can I have one of my books? Can I have one of my books? Like, no, but that one of your books, yeah. Like, self-promotion with books. And I thought that's a beautiful story about trying to get, you know, his books out, getting people to read. But the one thing that I think Roald enjoyed was, like, critics telling him what his stories are like. He's like, that's not remotely about what I was trying to say at all. That's your opinion. And so sometimes it is that thing of, it's just people's opinions. When actually when you speak to creators, it's a debate. There's a lot of innocence with stuff I do, but the people trying to fish you.
But the songs, and it's about like artists and like, oh yeah, that means that.
And that's now everything these metrics.
Flicking through the socials, I think even this morning, like I saw some of John Lennon talk in the interview back in the 70s, being like, me and Paul are fine. Like, your interpretation of what this song means is not about Paul, it's actually about me.
Mm-hmm.
Paul knows this. As long as we know that, that's the main thing. You can sputter and say what you want. And I was like, it's quite interesting what be able to world see of the inner world, and, the half of it, you won't try and believe it, but I guess it's trying to get the opportunity to speak to those people and find out. Second value film, it's got to be Fantastic Fox. It was the first big production I worked on, so I was a huge place in my eyes, Roald Dahl again. It was nice to be involved with the first, it was Anderson stop motion feature. And I did it through just through humour. And I got a phone call about that job, and I was shit-faced. And somebody phoned me, and I just handed my work, my last bit of work. So I was on the top of this roof, Sopra, and I'm like, Drew, can you go work at my door? I was like, oh, fuck, bloody yeah. So Fox, I got on a train to London, and I had to Reading, and I was that drunk, I got on the wrong train. And I phoned them back, I was like, so sorry, got the movie signing, because fully. And I went to, I went to an animation festival, but Annecy in France, and then once I did that, I went back in London from. So that film was a huge place in my heart, but that is, yeah, thanks to...
That Annecy is where you thought with...
And that Annecy, you got to play that with a tissue, yeah. I was on being inspired by seeing all these films on the way back, me and some friends from uni, that time, it was our last time we were all going to really be together for it, because we finished uni. And it was like, can we all try and come with an idea of, you know, like something we're unique and what we've seen? Well, there's not been a film that's mixed all the... or juxtapose all the mediums of animation together. How could we do that? And so we got thinking on the train, you know, it was like, there's some seasons and changes and stuff. So it was that kind of stem from there. And always the idiots that kind of carry on and really got stuck in and out there, only one.
I heard the character based on you.
Yeah, it's, I mean...
Bruce Redfield's background.
Yeah. But then, to be fair, all the lads I did picture to have helped in some way, help me get that film finished. So that'd be, without,
that's only your third.
Would have happened.
That's the issue.
No, because my own. It's never
going to be that's me. It's good though, but again, so I watched it again last night. It still stands up, even though it's 10 years. I don't think it's a massive amount of time, but still life. This is class, isn't it?
I guess because I see all the flaws, so I don't know.
But even in the interview on the BTS, you said you didn't realise how much time and effort, particularly I think it was the 2D stuff. But even, so going, I mean,
it's always behind it up in there.
Yeah.
No, sorry. So even when you said about cutting and editing as well, it's like a bit that stuck with me where you're like, it's not quite, especially in the stop motion, it's not quite what you want it. And then you're having to edit it and cut it and you're thinking, fucking hell. Yeah. You spend 3 days doing that tiny bit there and we'll now want to use it on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
But that's what you've got to do as an director. You're going to take that hat off and use that.
Yeah. There's some stuff that's
horrible.
It is horrible. I mean, there's some stuff we've done for some TV commercials. Where we've made some really cool stuff, and you know, some of the animators have got in. Like, I know it takes a long time to do some of the more experienced animators can bang things through quite quickly, depending on what they've got in front of them and how easy it is to rig something and get something going. I mean, we've had some amazing work from some animators, and one of the guys, Tom Edgar, who's one of our kind of, he's a really good friend of mine, he was an animation director, I think, on like Ambassador Mouse, and they got that. But he's always been one of our anecdotal guys for animations and like Edis. Helping me out with advice and direction, not long with a lot of the other animators. But Tom's, he will produce way too much content. And then me and Si, whoever they are, will sit there and go, I can't use that, it's just too long. And then it doesn't read up.
Yeah, get what you're about it.
So there's a lot, it'd be interesting to go back through all of that old footage and see what we could release to go, this is what we shot,
but
couldn't use because it wasn't approved beforehand. And that again is giving someone the creativity or the freedom to go have fun. But sometimes there's the intention, it's gone on for too long, it's not fitting in the shot. But it actually would really work if we could expand it. But it depends on the project. For TV commercials, you are set to like usually 30 seconds. It's a program, maybe a minute, depending on if it's broadcasting. But you've got a set amount of time, so you can't go over.
Have you put them together then as well, wait, on that? Is that some more best work? And it's kicked up on the adverts, the exact over now?
Yeah. No.
Well, there's the parameters of that issue for Scott as well. It has to be 18 minutes. Or it has to be, oh, was that the BTS? There's some remember
it. Yeah, it was the BTS.
That's on Scott as well, wouldn't
it? Yeah. No, there's a shorter version of some that's that was
before. Yeah.
But I think...
Parameters for a short film are like, this and this, but this and this, otherwise it starts going into this and it's different.
The character art, though, you've got to
know that
character. It's hard. I think there's so much that goes involved with production. You want to give everybody... the opportunity to say, you know, thank you, this is your work shown. We've done stuff and it's just not been, I can't cut it in. We did stuff, it was on a Star Wars job with Disney once and we did loads of stuff. And because of their timings, the other stuff that they've had on and there's a lot of action in there, they have to then chop up or speed our animation up. It's not how we shot it. So when you're like, oh, that's not kind of, but the director's around, it works, it tells a story, it's from there, and you go, okay.
No, fine, start coming then. He hasn't really,
So there's a bit where things that when you've shot them and you've graded them to how you think it fits to something else you edit, but move them up close and stuff, it's up then to somebody else to kind of make their own verdict of that as well.
I suppose from a company, but you've done what you're able, that's your reading, and then you're the artist in your own.
And then eventually,
it's quite a bit more, that's my master degree.
But eventually, then we can share that, you know, this is what we can choose. But that's the same with every single animator that works on a project. Well, if they're lucky enough, because a lot of studios don't give it to them. We try as well to be helpful, but we give them their clips that have got it to work from.
Is that true?
But they'll like, analyze a shot and see the film and go, oh, they've fucking messed that up there. They've certain that up or they've cut that bit out. But, you know, the so community device that also happens behind the scenes that no one really sees.
Mm.
Yeah, we have, yeah, it's a great guest, we're over television and you've got a lot of sites. You know, you might have to be approved at one stage, but then further on down the lights, it's got to still go up to the 3 or 4 people, and it's like, okay. And then you take even the few weeks to get sorted, so it's fit. But yeah, as long as you're seeing the result, it's like, you know, yeah, so I'm there.
Good eye off of
you. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for your time. You're an absolute legend.
Cheers. Keep it up, guys.